Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I'm former double agent and Newsweek editor-at-large, Naveed Jamali, and you're listening to Declassified, brought to you by Newsweek. Declassified is an exploration of what it means to be secure and of the people all over the world who are quietly working to keep us safe. In my career in the intelligence community, I served as a double agent and as an intelligence officer. My goal is to help explain the things that you can see, the proverbial iceberg above the waterline, and let you know what is below it.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Ashley Guttermouth is a unique force to be reckoned with in the stand-up comedy world. She's a brilliant performer who's been shouted out by massive stars like Jerry Seinfeld and Jimmy Fallon, just to name a few. You might have heard of them. She does clean stand-up, which, frankly, is even more unusual in this day and age, especially when you hear what her comedy is about. But honestly, that's what makes Ashley really special, is the subject matter that made her famous on social media. And she's done it with almost 90,000 followers on Instagram and 1.9 million, that's million with an M, likes on TikTok. So what is Ashley's shtick? Well, her husband is an Air Force Reserve colonel. And as she and any military spouse will tell you, service impacts pretty much every part of a marriage, pretty much every single day. Ashley, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let's start.
I noticed you didn't pronounce my last name.
Yes.
Do you want to give it a shot?
No, I don't.
No, Guterman. Ashley Guterman.
Guterman.
It is so hard. When I go on stage, I just tell people it's Smith. It's.
I assume you use that when you go place your Starbucks order.
Yes, I have to.
Can you? I can only imagine the derivatives of that. You know, it's funny, not to go too much on a tangent right out of the gate, but like Loudermilk, the congressman who's in charge with the involved in the January 6th commission or investigation, rather, for giving a tour. Like, I often wonder, like, Loudermilk, how would that work if you go into Starbucks? Like, I just feel like, I don't know. Like, how would they, would it be oat milk? What would, I don't, I can only imagine.
We've only got quiet milk.
Quiet
they
milk.
They just whisper his name. He never gets his order because they're always.
That's right. They're like non-sedition milk. I don't know. Anyway, all right, let's get back to the matter.
Sorry.
We're already doing terribly, Ashley. Terribly. So talk a little bit. Track. Let's talk a little bit about you. Now, obviously you're, I mean, I just love your comedy, but there's, you know, we're talking about the military. You obviously, from very dry and sober perspective, you have a real connection to the military. Can you explain a little bit for those who may not know what your background is and who you are?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Ashley Gudermuth. I'm an 89-year-old mother of six. And I work really hard for my family. I am a military spouse. My husband is in the Air Force Reserves. He's a pilot. My family, my dad was in the military. My grandfather was in the military. When I was a teenager, my dad sent a Marine recruiter to the house. So this is sort of my way of continuing that legacy.
I see that had a real impact on you.
It had a real impact. But yeah, I live on McGuire, Fort Dix, McGuire Air Force Base. McGuire, Dix, Lakehurst. It's a joint base in New Jersey. And love it here. Yeah, been a military spouse for a while. And
how many different places have you lived in?
Oh, okay. So we move usually, even though my husband is in the Air Force Reserves, we still move every 2 years or so. The shortest time we've ever been in a place is 9 months.
Wow.
I've lived in D.C., in the Seattle area, Washington State, Washington, D.C., Maine, Washington. That's the same thing. I've just said it four times. Dover, Delaware, Georgia, Warner Robins, Georgia. Don't know if you've been there. Mm-hmm. That is an interesting place. I loved Warner Robins, Georgia. A lot of people, it's sort of like a mixed bag because they think it's kind of in the middle of nowhere. But I'll tell you what, they have two roads and a Red Lobster.
Red Lobster, that's high living.
What more do you need? So live there, and now I'm in New Jersey. So we move quite a bit. But it's, I like it. I like the ride.
It's an adventure, right? I mean, it legitimately is. And we share a weird, or I shouldn't say weird, we share a connection, which probably is not that uncommon here. I was on, you talked about McGuire, Dix, Lakehurst. And by the way, the Dix jokes are, they're plentiful. There are many of them. I've heard them all. So I was stationed on the Dix side, which, of course, as you know, is the Army side. And there is clearly a divide. It's like going from like East Berlin to West Berlin. Like, you can tell who has the money and who doesn't. I mean, I remember, like, you know, a lot of asbestos warnings, a lot of don't drink the water on the Air Force side. And then, of course, you know, you have pudgies on the Army side, and the Air Force side. Yeah, I think you have pudgies, and you have the, you know, it's high living. It's high living.
There's they're nice chicken wings over at Pudgies. We have the Air Force side. We have the asbestos warnings, and we have the all those, you don't drink the water. But on the Army side, those signs just say, hey, doesn't the asbestos smell good? The water's chewy.
They probably charge you for the asbestos, right? They would check our pockets. Like, you can't leave with any of this asbestos. You can't. I mean, that's, we're gonna have to dock you some pay there.
It's a big base, you know, the joint base. So it's three. And the funny thing to me, because you were in the Navy, right?
Yeah.
Lakehurst is part of this base.
Yes,
but
it is.
45 minutes away.
Yeah. And it's, of course, where the Hindenburg, the famous fixed picture of the Hindenburg. There's like a tiny plaque. Like, if you've ever been there, that tiny little plaque. This is where the Hindenburg is. And it's like you have this to kick the gravel away. the only I remember about Lakehurst, that when I spent a little bit of time there, was that like they had a little shopette there, and it like promptly opened at like 8, and there was already a line of retirees to get their, you know, their daily booze. It's kind of depressing.
Come on in. But I like, you know, so I'm on the McGuire side. I'm on the fancy side. But I've lived on joint bases before.
Sure.
You know what? I lived on Fort Belvoir.
That's beautiful.
Fort Belvoir is amazing.
It's the home of National Defense University, right?
Is
it NDU on Fort McNair?
I forget. I feel like Fort was it one of the same complex? Wasn't there some? Because Fort Belvoir is in D.C., right?
Fort Belvoir is in D.C. It is about 45 minutes from the main part of D.C. Bowling Air Force Base, where I also lived, is right next to Fort McNair. Fort McNair has like the Eisenhower School. It has the Inter-American Defense College. Right. Which is pretty neat. My husband went there. That was really cool because I got to be a part of a spouse's club for other countries.
Oh.
When he went there. And it was the best year ever.
Wow.
First of all, that school is supposed to be for people that, for soldiers, airmen, all it's for people all around the world, military and State Department. But you're supposed to be able to speak another language. We didn't at all. My husband got an interpreter, but I just winged it.
That must have worked out fabulously, I imagine.
There weren't any that many people from the United States there, North America, South America, Central America. But we would each do a celebration of our country. Well, it was like once a month we would have our spouse meet up. So when it came time for the United States, I thought, all right, what am I going to do? I need to bring everything together. So I brought in Twinkies. These are people that were like really respectable.
Of course, it's a big deal.
Generals,
sure.
And they go on to become presidents of their country. Yep. It's a really big deal. And I was like, how can I ruin this, I guess? So I brought in, I had this huge spread, Twinkies. I had baked beans. I was like, what do we do on 4th of July? You know, but the thing was, it wasn't 4th of July. It was Groundhog's Day. It was February when that was my month, but I thought we're going to do this right. So I had sparklers, and then I taught everybody how to make s'mores. I brought in a blowtorch, a big propane blowtorch in the Navy facility, and I taught everybody how to make s'mores. And they did it. We went around. We did it in different languages. We had interpreters. I taught all these people from around the world how to make s'mores. And then I was holding a propane torch and a giant, like half-gallon jug of Jack Daniels. Okay. And the admiral of the Inter-American Defense College walks in and she goes, "Oh, hi, Ashley. What?" She goes, "I'm going to go and turn around now." I didn't see anything. I said, "Thank you very much, ma'am." She still coined me at the end. So it wasn't, set anybody on fire.
You know, the best part of that story is that right now, probably every February, the people that attended that who are now back in their host nation probably invite the ambassador, the U.S. ambassador in February with sparklers, a blowtorch for the honorary. "We understand this is really important, a big deal in your country, ambassador." And of course, the Americans, we can't say no. So you've potentially started, you know, this cultural exchange that will forever be more, because in polite society, no one can say, "Well, actually, that's not really a thing, you know, Mr. Ambassador."
I hope I did. And I'll tell you what, if you want to have a complicated day, explain to people that speak a different language than you what Groundhog's Day is. It translates to Dia de la Mamarta. And I had a translator where I was like, okay, once a year, we pull this animal out of a hole. And if it sees its shadow, and they're all looking at me like, this is America.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Kind of a fourth like, bit country is this.
you brought... Why are you holding a propane torch, lady? So yeah, it was the best year.
Yeah, It sounds like you left a lasting legacy.
I hope so.
If not, probably an additional warning about what can't and can't be brought into that room.
Me and the president of Chile, there's just a picture of us on the wall. So what could be from this school and what was.
they learned American tactics and, of course, Groundhog Day. What more can we instill?
What else would you want to know?
Yeah, I think I feel like if we should maybe, you know, tamp down on spreading democracy and maybe more about spreading a Groundhog Day awareness.
You know what? I feel like we've really made a difference today. I think you're right.
So clearly, you know, influencing military families from another country is one thing. But, you know, that's the interesting thing is that you're talking about all these, you know, when I lived in Seattle too. What's the big joint base out there?
Joint out of Tacoma. Base, Lewis
McChord. That's right. Which I spent time there as well. Huge, huge facility. But you know, you talk about all these places that, in many cases, are close to large civilian population centers. So clearly, I imagine they allow you to interact with non-military people as well, right? Is that, do you have permission to do that?
Well, they don't let me. you know what? You're talking about Lewis McChord. Yes, it is absolutely massive base.
Massive, yeah.
And when we were there for about 2 years, and my husband was deployed for 7 months of that.
Yeah.
And there was also wildfires. I got into a car accident back from
of course.
A stand-up show that I got into. While he had deployed for like 2 weeks, and I was talking to him, and then somebody hit me doing 100 on I-5, spun me around on the highway. I got a traumatic brain injury, lost hearing in one part of my ear, and my body is forever wrecked. And I say,
oh my gosh,
I want to say peaches, and it'll come out, oh, blueberries. But I'll tell you what happened. When living there, I would keep the windows open at night. And for those of you that have no...
is this the great air conditioner debate of the Seattle region? Because I know it well. Go ahead, please.
Well, so I would leave the windows open because the air was nice. And I kept having active shooter dreams. I kept having these dreams where I was being attacked or being mowed down
by terrible.
Helicopters. It was absolutely horrible. And then for those of you that don't live near military bases, especially Army bases, they post these noise calendars.
Yeah.
And so you go on Facebook and you say, okay, am I under attack or is it just a 19-year-old training with a mortar? And so far, it's always been just training. But I kept having these dreams and I was like, what is going on? It's 2 a.m. I'm waking up and I'm like, why am I having these crazy dreams? What's going on? And then I thought, oh, it's the Army.
It always
They're
is.
Out at 2 a.m. and it's just da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And you get, you know, after a while, it just becomes comforting, which in of itself is not
comforting, right? Like same thing with McGuire. You ever walk out when they're doing the artillery range and you just like, what?
Yep.
Like your fillings rattle. I mean, yeah, okay. So this is a really good way to ask this question. I mean, there's such a uniqueness about when you're in the military, when you're living on a military base. I mean, these are like in many cases, not many cases, in all cases, they're self-enclosed ecosystems. You can't just walk onto a military base. You know, you can't, you know, it's a somewhat closed society by virtue and by nature, right? By definition, by construct. So what is it like when people who have absolutely zero connection to the military, I mean, you're a comedian. And they ask you what it's like. I mean, what kind of stuff do you get asked? I mean, that has got to be weird. I think the perception, what people have in living that life is probably, I mean, it's all over the place, yeah. Right?
It's a totally unique experience. You know, they say only 1% of the people right. in the United States will serve in the military. And then they don't all stick around. Some of them don't have families. But I love the idea of being able to live on a military base and have these, you know, interesting things that happen. But what do people ask? People ask just anything and everything that might not make any sense. Like, are you going to visit your husband while he's deployed? the other day, I post videos every day about military life, and I've done that for a long time. And a lot of my stuff.
All of it's serious, by the way. Completely serious.
All of it's completely take all of my advice. And I've gotten really people really mad about it. I had somebody leave me a message that was like, I thought this was actual advice. How dare you? I'm like, are you kidding me? I said that there was a Navy SEAL that moonlit at Red Lobster. Second Red Lobster talk about in this podcast, so they need to sponsor us.
That's right.
Come on. Come on, Naveed.
At least some free lobster or something.
At least some free lobster. So, yeah, I've gotten that. I actually had somebody ask me the other day. They said, "Oh, are you're actually a military spouse?" And I was like, "Well, how good would I have to be?"
And if you're gonna lie about something, why choose that?
Why would I lie about that? What a weird thing to lie about. yeah, but people. I mean, people do. You know, I do give out a lot of silly things, but I do have people that actually come to me for real advice. And so I do try to, especially on Instagram, because it gives me a bit of a better platform. I have these little highlight bubbles that talk about, hey, when the movers come, pay attention to this. You know, when you're, or I'll have people ask me, like, something's happening with their husband or their wife, and they're like, well, do you have any advice on what I should do? And I always say, You should not, first of all, ever talk to a comedian about psychological advice.
Right.
We are not, good in that way. Something has gone very wrong that has led us here. But I always recommend Military OneSource.
Yeah.
And that is a great free resource for military families that a lot of the young people, you get 17, 18, 19, they're married and away from their families, and they don't know about Military OneSource yet. So I try to get that out there to make sure that they get real help, because as much fun as I have, you know, making fun of everything and trying to make jokes about everything, I do want to help people
sure.
in the long run.
No, and that's a very good point. And look, there's something very comforting about being in, you know, a military community like that, where you live where you work. There's also obviously something that can be very disconcerting about living where you work, right? And having your boss and her and his, you know, family live, you know, a few houses down. I mean, it is very insular, and there's pros and cons. Just like with everything in life, there's pros and cons. I mean, remember we were going to, you know, we were considering moving into Dick's because I had the option to do it. After 180 days, you can move in. And I remember looking with my wife, and it was just like, you know, there was something very, consoling about just, you know, it's the same thing like wearing a uniform. You don't have to worry about certain things. Mm-hmm. But there's obviously the con of that too. And, you know, I think that it, you talk about Groundhog Day, right? It can be very Groundhog Day. And
yep.
You don't have to just be in combat for some of the intensity. I think, you know, the things that you and your husband and you and your family take for granted. Like, I remember just the same thing at Dick's. I mean, again, there's a artillery range. There's a whole huge range for the Army. And you just hear, you know, nighttime training, especially when the surge was going on with, you know, the Iraq and Afghanistan campaigns. And it just becomes sort of the fabric of life, which is kind of weird, right? Like, that's not really a normal thing to kind of grow up around. But
right.
It becomes normal.
It is. And it's all, you know, there's something about, especially when you've lived on base for a while, what they say, going through the gate. You get through the gate and you can kind of breathe a little,
yeah.
And it's different. It's eventually it all ends, because you can't live on base forever. If my husband died, they would kick me off in 30 days.
Yeah.
Right. I'm only here because I am a dependent. I am dependent on him. But there is something to being around people that you know are all in kind of the same experience.
Yep.
And it also is, you know, my husband works 7 minutes. That's why we always like to live on base, because it's such a close commute.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's got long hours. So, and I know that if I'm on base, that there's resources that
sure.
I can get to. But, you know, there is things that could go wrong with
absolutely.
Your family only living 7 minutes from where you work. You're never, you know, you're never fully at work.
There's no you can't decompress.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, that you know,
it doesn't end.
So for many people, for that commute home or that commute to work is a sort of a decompression. It's there's a barrier you pass between your work life and your home life. And I think, mm-hmm. you know, it's a very tough thing. So I get back to this idea of, we're talking about psychological health and all that. It's such an important thing. And I think one of the challenges a lot of people have is that, one, you know, being in the military is dangerous, not just because you're in combat. I mean, we see a week or so ago, there was, you know, just a Marine Osprey went down and, you know, routine training flight. So just the normal humdrum of military life can be mundane until it's not. And it doesn't have to just be dangerous in combat. And the second thing is that, you know, psychological wellness can come from intensity that has nothing to do, again, with being in combat. I think that you're right. It's, I mean, listen, I'm sure you and your husband, I mean, there's so many junior airmen that I'm sure have, you know, some of them are everywhere from 18 to, you know, young officers who are in their, you know, early 20s. I mean, they're dealing with normal life, but it's in many cases amplified with intensity because of their job and what they do and where they live, the isolation. And it's, you know, I think it's one of the biggest changes I hope I continue to see is an acceptance of, you know, mental health awareness and that it is something that people should strive, you know, to, as a leader, that they should encourage, that it's okay to say like, hey, I'm having a tough time, which obviously in the military, whether you're a spouse or you're in the military, you know, you're active duty or whatever, it's, that's not always been looked on very kindly, right?
No. And I mean, people, you know, I try not to make too specific military generalizations because people will say, oh, she's just a spouse. She doesn't know what she's talking about. But there's definitely a prevailing, or at least the way it used to be, of if you talk about it, you're going to get kicked out.
Right. Literally.
That's your job. So people don't talk about it. And then you end up with people hurting themselves or killing themselves. And that's obviously not going to work.
No, that's not a good way to deal with it.
We need to do something about it.
Right. Well, you know, again, anyone who's been in the military or around it can understand humor, especially dark humor, a little bit of gallows humor, right? Like it's something that we're all miserable, so we're all miserable together. And there's a, you know, there's a thing that, but there's also the absurdity of some of the things, you know, like we would always joke in the Navy that it's yesterday's technology tomorrow. And because we'd come in and it would, I tell the story of literally getting an order from someone down in the Pentagon. And they were like, we really like this because I was an intelligence officer, which meant I did very, very little except prepare reports and PowerPoint. And we get this order and it was like, I want you to start with the LHF first. So we were sitting there looking at LHF and we're like, what the hell is an LHF? Is it a new type of radio frequency? We know UHF and VHF. We just never heard of LHF. So I call the chief, calls, you know, our little, I was a division officer at the time. We call everyone. We're trying to freaking figure out what LHF is. Within like, and I'm not exaggerating, and this is probably a sad case of telling who I am, but it took us about an hour of the 3-4 of us sitting around trying to figure out. And we finally figured out that no, it's not a radio. He meant literally lowest hanging fruit. But being the military, he had to abbreviate it, and we couldn't figure out what the heck he was talking about. So the absurdity of like the stupid things like that is you know, on one hand, in the moment, you're like, good God, like really, this is what we're doing here. But it's important to have, I think, humor obviously is an important outlet. And I wonder for you, I mean, obviously you talk about the military and you know, you're sort of this Stephen Wright of the female spouse world, very dry, like, I love it. But how much, I mean, I watch your stuff, most of it's connected to the military. How much source material do you get on a daily basis just being on a military base? How much source material is actually out there?
Well, you know, I put out a lot of videos. I need a lot of attention, clearly.
Well, you're not digging hard. It's for it.
Putting them out there. I think in just last month, I did 150 just last month alone, which is a lot. That's 5 to 6 a day. But I really like it. And I'm always got my eyes open. You know, comedians, you have to write things down. If you don't write things down immediately, it will be gone and you will hate yourself. So you have to write it down or you put it in your phone or something like that. And then, so I've got big lists of things that I might want to talk about. And sometimes I'll run it past my husband, especially.
Oh, goodness.
You know, back in the day, I don't know, this was probably 7 months ago or something like that. Back in the day, 7
right.
months ago. Seemed like a different time. I had one video where I said something like, hey, if your husband isn't getting promoted, what you need to do is contact your state senator. And he was just like, why would you do that? Why would you do that, actually? Why would you? And you could just see him. He just walks away. He's like, please stop, please.
I think we have to explain that show for people. Yeah, this emphasis on state senator. Go ahead.
Just I like to be specific.
Yes.
You know,
maybe your city council.
Or city. Oh no, I don't know. You know, if you get down to mayor, what's he gonna do? He can't get your husband.
That's so just being unreasonable.
He's just gonna channel it up. So people get. You know, there's a lot of different stereotypes about military spouses, and there are. There are people that complain that their spouse, especially online, Facebook, there's a lot of Facebook groups for each individual base, and you'll see a lot of drama. And my best advice is to stay out of it, but watch it because it's funny.
Wait, so hold on. Is that if I'm a up and coming comedian and I want to find good source material on military life, you know, where is the best place to go? It's a multi-choice question. Is it the exchange or the commissary, or is it like the spouses of base XYZ Facebook group?
you definitely want to start with the spouses of XYZ Facebook group, because that's going to be the heaviest hitting stuff. When you're at the commissary, there's definitely good stuff at the commissary. You've got your expired milk. You've got the people that bag your groceries. That doesn't happen anywhere else. But if it's the first time that you're there and you're like, oh, I got to tip somebody.
good luck with that.
Yeah. Or if you don't have cash, my God. So it's just unusual things. But if you start with the, oh, you know, I'm sleeping with my neighbor Facebook page, that's going to give you plenty of
some pure gold. It's
pure gold.
It's a bygone era that is now on Facebook.
And, you know, a lot of stuff I get from I have a something called the Air Force Wives Handbook, which is 317 pages long, just for your
wow.
Stephen Hawking's A Brief History of Time is only 212 pages.
Feels like they could have made that one PowerPoint slide. I'm just thinking.
All of time. Yeah, this book is huge and not really any pictures. It was originally written in 1993, but my copy's from 2010.
Wow.
And there's one for the Army, too. That one's even longer. it's a lot of like what to wear compared to what your husband's wearing. One of my favorite chapters is how to eat tricky foods, which thank God.
Tricky foods? What, like sneaky foods that might fool you into something? You just signed my mortgage.
You just, whoops. Oh, you know what? Here's a good tip actually for anyone listening. If you are having a party and you offer coffee or tea, it's important that you give people a choice. You don't just, Naveed, you were just saying you get coffee, you get tea.
That's
but
right.
this book is saying no, ask, which is great.
But do you maybe like point a firearm sort of in their general direction, sort of encourage one choice? Like, no, I'm not, it's the implication. I'm not saying you should have coffee, but if you don't have coffee, it won't go well. Just again, no pressure.
Depends on what kind of party it is. If it's like if it's an informal party, you just stick with like a large butcher knife.
Large butcher knife.
But if it's an evening formal do, then yes.
Yeah, and you know that if it's the Army regulation that had the very specification about how large that knife should be, and before you use it, make sure you check this, computer based training and get certified.
You got to do VTs. There you go. You called it computer based training. You gave everybody. You got.
Yes, I didn't want to give the acronym, but you know,
this whole thing will only be acronyms. There, I have a video where I talk about. I do a whole like four sentences and only the same acronym. AFRC. Is anybody going to AFRC with AFRC from AFRC? And they all mean different things. Airmen and Family Readiness, Air Force Reserve Command, there's a couple others. But yeah, those are real things.
Has the Secretary of the Air Force or anyone in the Air Force actually asked you to do like instructional videos for, you know, for Air Force personnel and families?
I haven't gotten any real requests for instructions. I have had some. I'll get some that reach out that will see me
or give you a cease and desist. I don't know. Is it?
They're like, why? You got a general that's like, hey, can you stop telling people to park in my parking space if they're able to use Excel? I say, well, sir, it says general admin. That's ADM is for administrator, not admiral. I don't know what you're talking about. And so
has that actually happened? Has anyone ever actually asked you to stop doing that?
Nobody has stopped. I get a lot of people from all ranks and that will come up to me giggling, just like, oh my God, I can't believe you're doing it. You're saying it. I can't believe it's almost like I've released something inside of them. You would think that they would be mad. But I have a history of saying ridiculous things, to everyone, but not also to military people. There was the four star that was in charge of Air Force Reserve Command. I was at a breakfast. So I went up to him and I said, sir, just want you to know, I will follow my husband anywhere you want to send him. You want to send him to the jungle? That's fine. And then I walked away and my husband was like, we're not doing anything in the jungle right now. I said, yeah, I know. That's I'm trying to be clear.
Was he just like, what the hell?
He was just like, yeah, he was just like, well, thanks for coming to breakfast. I don't know why you're here. I always try to do like feats of strength. I arm wrestle wing commanders. There was the Secretary of the Air Force, MR. Mobility Readiness, I think it is, who was a big shot. And I was just walking next to him. And I said, hey, how you doing? Have you ever been to the Pentagon City Mall? And he just looked at me and I said, they've got a great TJ Maxx, you know? And my husband was like, that guy has guards. What are you doing? It's like, well, he needs to know about the deals.
They're just like you. They shop at TJ Maxx, right?
They put their pants on 3 legs at a time.
3 legs at a time. Consulting the Air Force Wives Manual.
Consulting. But yeah, nobody has complained. I'm sure that there are people that are, that, you know, I do get complaints from like non-military people, but they're usually just mad at my.
But are there any like significant senior people that look at your stuff and are like, that don't get the joke?
Not that they've told me.
Not that they've told you. You definitely have a file, though. You definitely have a file somewhere.
I have a file, and I will keep a book, and they will get their own videos. If they don't like, they must like me. That's the rule. I definitely have a lot of, I have generals and people like that that look at my stuff, and they just, when I see them in public, they're just like, oh my goodness. And then they'll be like, what do you think about this? And what's funny is when people give me ideas for videos that they think are funny, it is usually kind of funny, but it's also so far beyond the line. Like, here's something I would never say. Hey, I'm never going to make a joke about something that's going to get somebody actually in trouble. So,
right.
For example, on flight lines or, you know, where all the big airplanes are, there are red lines.
Yes.
And the red line, you don't cross the red lines.
No, they shoot you, technically.
They shoot you. They shoot you if you cross the red lines. And I tell you what, if I was a security forces guy, I would be like, I'd be like, they're almost at the red line.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want, but I'm excited. I'm excited. I get to yell at them. And so I would never be like, hey, if you're ever out on the flight line, just sprint over that red line. That's the finish line. You know, I wouldn't do something that like out there. But this is the kind of stuff that people come to me with. They're just like, no.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, there are just so many jokes. I mean, how about walking on the grass? When did that become a thing? I remember being in Fort Worth where there was no grass and I'm walking across these stones and literally this window flies open and this guy sticks his head out and goes, hey. Don't walk on the grass. And I'm like,
what? Don't walk on the colonel's grass.
And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? There's no grass here. It's rocks. But this, again, is the absurdity. Look, part of these jokes, of course, is like getting someone in trouble, right? Like, obviously, go find a 20-pound bag of air, right? Or sending someone to do that sort of those pranks. But yeah. I am sure that there are very intricate things that are proffered to you that like would result in, you know, that people would think are funny, like, you know, hiding someone's hat so they can't leave or they have to run across the parking lot with their head over, you know, their hand over their head. But seem benign, but like, yeah, there are definitely things where, you know, I'll give you, here's one of my great stories. I had a sailor, and we would have to do periodic security reviews because we all had top secret clearances, and he's doing his, and so I check in with him, I'm like, how'd it go? And he goes, it went fine, but, you know, there might be a problem. And so basically what he did when he was being interviewed by this investigator, he'd spent time in Guantanamo Bay because we had a mission there, and he came back and she was like, is there anything you want to talk about your time in Cuba? And he's like, well, you know, I brought some Cubans back. And she goes, oh, well, I don't think it's a problem for the cigars. And he goes, no, the people.
Oh my God.
And then, you know, and the thing is, obviously, everything's being recorded. So, as you know, as a comedian, like, sometimes sarcasm doesn't translate to the written word.
No. Jeez.
So we had to explain that, you know, so that became, like, it's pretty funny. Like, I got to give him credit. That's a pretty funny thing to say. But, like, the military doesn't see that.
No. Also, very high stakes with a low rate of return.
That's
for
right.
In
a room of one. Yeah.
Clearance investigator who don't normally have, they don't, like, walk in, like, all whack a whack at, let's jump around. It's more like, who do you know? For him to just be like, this person, I'm gonna make them laugh.
I don't know. But this is the kind of sophomoric, you know, people you're dealing with sometimes. He was like 21. I mean, you know, what does he know?
I love it.
But this is so okay. What is the strangest thing that you've come across on a base? A strangest story that's like humorous, but of course is like. you really still can't believe that that actually happened, that people on the outside might be surprised to learn about, but those in the inside won't be. Go.
Go.
Besides expired milk.
Besides the expired milk. You know, a lot of things, because I'm narcissistic, relate back to me.
Sure.
Just over the years of things that have happened. Like I mean, this is an individual kind of deal. Normally on military bases, it's very hard for spouses to get jobs. Military spouses are tremendously underemployed, and also don't get jobs because they they're in the interview, they'll say, we can't hire you because you're going to move, which is ridiculous.
Right.
I had an interview once where they said to me, does your husband know that you want to work here? And I was like, well, what? I'm sorry, did I just go back to 1945?
Right, Jesus.
What happened? So I remember, there's a lot of people that have huge families. And I remember this woman came up to me once and she blocked me in the commissary. She took her cart and folded it like halfway so I couldn't go any further. And she said, hey, your husband works with my husband. And the last person that had your husband's job, he helped put a new roof on our house. They lived off base.
Right.
And put a new roof on our house. And I need you to start babysitting my kids. And I said, I can't. I'm busy. And she said, you have nothing going on.
Jeez.
And you need to really up your game with my family. I was like,
what
is this? And that kind of thing has happened a few times. She was the most intense. And I remember I went up to her once, and it was, we were in the middle of Inter-American Defense College, and my husband was, but I, you know, part of it. And I was learning about Mexican Independence Day, and, I went up to her and I said, oh, it's Mexican Independence Day. And she looked at me and she goes, I'm not Mexican. She walked
Good
away.
God. Is this the kind of person that like wears her spouse's rank?
Yeah, definitely. And he was retired even. He was out and they just.
Oh, goodness.
You know, so it was intense. The wearing of rank is such an interesting thing. I knew, so talking about crazy things,
yeah.
I knew somebody that called. And I've seen this a few times, but a couple of people stand out in particular that call their husband by their rank. So they will say Major Smith, and they'll use their last name or they'll use like an initial. Major S doesn't like this. And you're like, wow, what is it like for you?
Are you allowed to vote? Can you drive a car by yourself?
Well, you get the feeling from those type of people that they completely run the household.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're doing that as a power trip. That particular person came up to me and told me that I needed to stop putting pictures online because she was like, you're not going to know where it's going to go. You can't make silly pictures. And I was
good
like,
advice. I'm glad you didn't take it.
I'm glad. Yeah, right. But I just can't imagine ever calling my husband by his rank or anybody do it. Like my joke is I'm not calling my husband by his rank unless I'm married to Captain Crunch. And that is value. We respect cereal in this house.
No, you have to. Especially the captains, right? That's got to be.
Especially. You will get, you'll get people that will stop being your friend if they get promoted. Because sometimes they have to move houses.
Right.
You know, because houses are on rank structures and neighborhoods are on rank structures. So if they get promoted, they might have to move to a completely different neighborhood. Things are weird. You know, Warner Robb, Georgia had an enlisted club and an officers club that was separated. And then as I was leaving, they sort of combined them. But it's such a. It's such an interesting.
No, it's
thing.
It is. I mean. It's funny, you know, it's like in the outside world that, you know, the joke is that, you know, how can you tell if a guy owns a Ferrari? Well, he'll tell you within the first 2 seconds, right? Like, and they're definitely, would you say that there are still those who, you know, wear their spouse's rank, and this can go either way, I imagine, but, you know, as like they're, and not to say that like your spouse's success, you know, even in the civilian world, right? You can point to, you know, you're right. successful because of your spouse. There's no, it's a team. It's a team effort. There's no denying that. But this is something different, right? When someone literally wears the rank of their, you know, wife or husband, or, you know, there is, there's very much like, that is like a stereotypical, like we've all, it's like the Karening of, and I don't mean to make this sound like it's just genders.
And there is, so it, I have a lot of jokes, obviously, but there is a lot of truth in, you're not going to get anywhere without your spouse being supportive.
Sure.
And there, but there are spouses that take that too far, you know, my husband is Captain so-and-so. And you're like, okay, great. What are you? What's your name now? And you're like, or they want to be addressed as Mr. and Mrs. Captain Smith.
Yeah.
Or they totally, but those people, when they meet me, it doesn't, the conversations don't last long because they see me not taking them seriously at all. And then I just start playing with them, you know.
Well, you just start hanging out with them for source material, right? Like that's.
Start hanging out.
What do you think about this, Karen? Go ahead then.
What'd you think? Or they'll want to invite you over for some, it's, oh my God, Naveed, they will invite you over for like a tea thing at like 7 a.m.
Oh.
And you're like, are you kidding me?
Well, the duty day starts at 7:30, Ashley.
Who are you? You think that big song, you think the big song wakes me up anymore? I am deaf to it. And here
you don't hop out of bed and salute towards the sound of the music?
I have to now, yeah. I think when my husband retires, we're still going to play that in the house. But I don't want to see anyone at 7 in the morning.
No!
I don't want to go to their house.
God!
Even the people that I do like, you know?
Yeah, like that just... So, okay. Here, it seems like that culture, that conventional like 1950s military culture has survived despite our best efforts to, you know, finally put a nail in its coffin. Why has it survived?
So there's a couple things. One is spouse underemployment. You know, we're not able to get out into the world as much.
Which, by the way, I know we're talking about, you know, comic relief here, but that actually is a real thing. Every command I was in, we always, you know, they're always, when there were civilian positions, they certainly tried to hire spouses. It was actually quite a few programs to do that. It's actually a legitimate thing.
Totally. And just being able to imagine, you think about how hard it is for women that can't get jobs because they have kids.
Yeah.
And then you compound that with, oh, I've got kids, but I also have to move. And also my husband might leave for a year and therefore I'll have to work from home, or I'll have to figure something else out because, you know, I have to then pick up all that. There's nobody to watch the kids when I'm working and all that. So that becomes more difficult. So it becomes that right back into those old roles of, okay, the wife stays at home in a lot of ways. Cause there's childcare offered on base, but the waiting lists are very
huge,
hard to get into. And then there's also things like we talk about spouses. You might say, well, don't we give enough money to be able to make sure that maybe spouses can't work so they can raise the kids so they can move around. There's food banks on military bases.
Yeah.
Full-on food banks.
No, it's true.
So it's definitely not, even though we have access to the commissary, it's not, you know,
it's not free. Right.
It's not free, yeah. So there's that. So that kind of pushes people into those roles where they don't get to accomplish whatever their dreams are. Mm. I definitely, you know, Warner Robins, I was trying to do open mics down there. The closest thing at the time was 2 hours to Atlanta. Stuff like that, you know, where military bases are sort of in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
But, it's definitely survived, but there's so many cool military spouses that aren't.
Of course.
We all make fun of the ones that are like that, the ones that just take it way too far and think of it as, I don't know.
It's the best thing that ever happened to them and they want you to know about it.
Right. And I've wanted to talk because I've basically structured my entire life around military jokes but I love, as much as I make fun of it, love it.
No,
I love everything that goes with it. So I am definitely team military spouse, but there's always going to be things to make fun of about it.
So then what happens, Ashley, when your husband retires? Are you going to start moving from military, you know, active duty jokes to military retiree jokes? Can you give us a preview?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm nervous about him retiring.
Yeah.
We're just thinking about it, not from a comedic standpoint, but from a, like we were talking about living on base.
Yeah.
We've lived on base for the last many years.
Yeah.
That looking out into the real world, knowing that we're not going to move every 2 years, so that our neighbors are people that we're going to know for years. Like, Naveed, I don't know. Like, if I can be polite to people for a good while, but after a bit, the real me is going to come out. I can't. I have to live on a farm. So at least on military bases, people move around. If you stick around long enough, you will be stationed with them again, so you can't be too rude. You can only egg their houses 4 times, and 5 is too
right.
much.
Five is just absurd.
5 is too much. But yeah, so we're nervous about it just because it's such a change. That big transition is a big change. But I don't know. I started looking into joining myself.
just to stay around.
I was like, yeah, I thought I can go be a public affairs officer. Why the heck not?
Why not?
You know, I'm already doing all this stuff. So,
well, you're too funny. I mean, all the public affairs officers I deal with they're pretty dry. No, actually, believe it or not, that's actually not true. I've spent quite a few hours with public affairs officers, and most of them, not just the military, most of them have a pretty good sense of humor. You are the epitome of know your audience, right? That's a perfect thing for a public affairs officer. I mean, at some point this is, you know, your military, that's the thing about it. At some point it comes to an end, whether you leave or you retire. And so so have you thought about where you're going to get your next source material? Where are you going to go? OTB, the DMV,
the DMV, I become the, I don't know what is next. My plan is to move to New York City probably within the next year or so and be able to do comedy more so there. Now I travel around, I go all over the country.
Exciting.
And go from there. But I want to do more stuff in New York City and sort of be based more out of there.
Yeah.
But I want to continue the military spouse stuff, even in retirement, because I think that there's a lot of people. First of all, there's a lot of people that watch my videos that have no military in their family, and they just support the military. And they're like, I didn't get this joke, but this is really funny. so I'll explain it to them or whatever. But it seems to be fairly universal, which is nice. And I'll transition to more, whatever's going on at the time, retiree jokes, I guess. But I'll still throw in the old stuff. Why the heck not? I figure I lived it.
Yeah.
But I want to be more, have advocacy, you know, being able to, maybe we can make a difference. Can I be this generation's Bob Hope? I don't know. We can have competing USOs.
We'll send you to Vietnam. I mean, it's okay. I'm okay with that.
I'll go. I'll do it. I don't know is that like, I promised that general I'd go to the jungle.
Why not? Right.
And Naveed's like, we can make it happen.
We can make it happen. We can make a couple of calls.
I am on board with everything and anything that's interesting. And I want to ultimately use the things that I do to be able to help people to get, you know, spouses get jobs or help people so that we don't need food banks on military bases or things like the Armed Services Arts Partnership, which is based in D.C. that gives free comedy classes and free acting classes and writing classes to military and their dependents. Something like that that can, help people in the long run, I think would be great.
Thanks again to Ashley Guttermouth for joining us. As always, you can find her on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Ash Guttermouth. If you like this episode of Declassified, we'd love if you could subscribe and leave us a 5-star review. As a new show, it really helps us grow and make sure that we can bring the content that you want to hear. As always, I'm Naveed Jamali for Newsweek.